If this isn't the fight of democracy and freedom against autocracy of our generation, I don't know what is.
Closing the vice on Moscow. It's Tuesday, March 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia ups Russian sanctions, Ukraine factories retool, prayers for Ukraine, Mumbai's environmental cleanup, and skis meet rodeo. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and U.S. diplomats met with Chinese diplomatic official Yang Jiechi in Rome on Monday. Ahead of the talk, Sullivan bluntly warned China to avoid helping Russia evade punishment from global sanctions that have hammered the Russian economy. He also warned them not to provide weaponry to Moscow. All this as Russia continues its unprovoked attack on neighboring Ukraine for a third week. Ukraine's government continues to call for a Western-backed no-fly zone and warplanes. Both requests have so far been denied. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Wounded soldiers fighting in Ukraine arrive at a hospital Sunday following a Russian airstrike on the garrison city of Yavoriv. In the months before Russia invaded its neighbor, Yavoriv hosted joint military exercises between Ukrainian and NATO troops. Ukraine's request for a Western-backed no-fly zone and warplanes have been rejected. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky asserted that his forces so far killed 13,000 Russian troops, destroyed 1,000 Russian military vehicles, and dozens of jets and helicopters. VOA cannot independently verify those figures. Ukrainian officials say the worry now is a Russian introduction of chemical or biological weapons.
They bombed children's hospitals so they can do everything. The whole world right now have to be engaged how to solve this problem.
As civilian casualties climb and millions of Ukrainians become refugees, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan addressed worries of Russian biochemical attacks.
It is a very legitimate concern, fear that Russia would use chemical weapons in Ukraine. They're right now accusing the United States and the Ukrainians of potentially using chemical or biological weapons, which is a tell. It's a tell that they themselves may be preparing to do so and then trying to pin the blame on someone else. That's a classic page out of the Russian playbook.
The remaining residents of Kyiv awaken to the sounds of air raid sirens and gunfire as Russian forces appear to be moving to encircle the Ukrainian capital. Fighting in Ukraine rallies support around the military, many of whom were civilians just weeks ago. Ukraine's plight has drawn foreign backing, not just from donations, but from people traveling into a war zone to help.
And when I saw it, I honestly booked a flight from California and came here as fast as I could. If this isn't the fight of democracy and freedom against autocracy of our generation, I don't know what is.
The chief of police for the Kyiv region said his officers collected evidence of Russian troops killing civilians. The aim, he says, is presenting that evidence to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Russia denies it is targeting civilians. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will virtually address the Canadian Parliament on Tuesday and the U.S. Congress on Wednesday. We invite you to read much more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Hong Kong stocks drop almost 4% as tech sector hammered. Chinese premier to step down ahead of leadership change. China records nearly 3,400 daily virus cases in worst outbreak. Armed resistance to Myanmar junta holding firm against military onslaught. North Korea's Kim says spy satellites to monitor actions by U.S. and its allies. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Australia has imposed fresh sanctions on wealthy entrepreneurs because of the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The latest round of Australian sanctions targets Russian oligarchs or wealthy business people thought to have close ties to the Kremlin. They include the prominent billionaire Roman Abramovich, the British-based owner of Chelsea Football Club, one of European soccer's most successful teams. He's always denied any close affiliation with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Abramovich is among more than 30 individuals sanctioned by Australia. They include the chief executive of Russian energy company Gazprom, Alexei Miller, and the head of Bank Rossiya, Dmitry Lebedev. Targeted financial sanctions and travel bans against Abramovich, who's one of the richest men in the world, bring Canberra in line with measures taken by British and US authorities. Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said in a statement that many of these oligarchs have facilitated or directly benefited from the Kremlin's illegal and indefensible actions in Ukraine since 2014. Ukrainian community leaders have welcomed various penalties imposed by Australia on Russia since its invasion of Ukraine. Canberra has spent $50 million on missiles and ammunition for Ukrainian forces. But Dmytro Matsipura, a Ukrainian-born associate professor at the University of Sydney Business School, wants Australia and its allies to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine to stop Russian aerial attacks.
Our army is very brave and they will fight until the end. But what we need is help of the international community, and that includes the military hardware, and it also includes protecting the civilians. So at the moment, our main message is to protect the civilians and to help close the sky from the Russian bombs and Russian attacks and Russian missiles.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Monday the invasion of Ukraine and the pressure it's put on gas supplies would make the world assess alternative sources of energy. Morrison said the conflict would provide opportunities for Australia's growing hydrogen industry that can power cars and homes.
Right now we're seeing the world reevaluate where it gets its energy from because of the war in Europe. 40% of Europe's gas is dependent on Russia. And so major advanced economies in the world today are considering again what their supply chains are. Japanese government is keen to continue to develop our hydrogen projects and partnerships with them, and that is only heightened by the uncertainty we've seen.
Australian sanctions are part of a US-led campaign to financially isolate Russia and disrupt its financial institutions. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, trading in fashion for firearms. Happening now in Asia. China faces the largest COVID-19 outbreak in 2 years, with 1,337 reported cases as the stealth Omicron variant of the coronavirus continues to spread. Shenzhen, the major tech and finance hub, went into lockdown as 75 new cases were reported. The city has begun the first of 3 rounds of testing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. Many Ukrainian businesses are now changing the way they do business. They've gone from making a profit to making war material. Lysia Bakalets has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Designer shirts with ethnic elements, fancy dresses and suits. Kyiv fashion designer Makar Lieberman has been working on his clothing brand since 2015. But because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, all that's on hold now.
At first, we made camouflage nets. Then there was a need for balaclavas and flags, so we switched to that. And the seamstresses started to work. In literally a day, they made over 100 balaclavas and about 100 flags.
Lieberman has 2 factories, one in Kyiv that is not operating at the moment, and the other one in Rivne, in western Ukraine. Recently, local volunteers came to them with a desperate plea for pillows.
I had great fabric, shirt fabric, from the Max Mara brand. I just had a roll of it, so we went ahead and used it. I also have white fabric, and I already said I'd be happy to use that to make sheets for hospitals, for example. We do what we can.
Все, що можемо, все робимо.
Alina Kocharovska owns a Ukrainian brand that makes shoes, accessories and clothing. After the initial shock of the Russian invasion, she joined her factory in Zhytomyr with a number of others and started to make combat boots.
We have given away over 300 pairs of combat boots already. We are sending a large shipment to Kyiv to the territorial defense fighters, to the army.
The goal is to make 1,000 pairs of combat boots, but it's tough work. Of the 170 people on staff, only 40 are able to work, because Zhytomyr is being bombed from time to time. In Kyiv, Ashot Galstyan turned his small cafe into a field kitchen. Even with the city's curfew, Galstyan found volunteer cooks who lived close to the cafe and made all the food delivery arrangements.
I made an Instagram post saying I'm cooking food with the help of family and volunteers and asked for help. And in just a few hours, people have donated a five-figure sum.
Right now, Galstyan's team makes about 300 lunches a day.
Every day we have some sort of soup, some meat or fish, and a side, also some salad or dessert. We deliver food to the military hospital and to the Kyiv Neurosurgery Institute, as well as to the Pavlov Hospital.
The only thing these three entrepreneurs are not making is a profit. But despite the invasion, experts say most businesses are managing to support their employees and stay open.
We can see that about one-third of companies still operate, even if it's not in full force. The majority of businesses are trying to pay salaries to their employees, those who had some sort of a financial cushion, of course.
The business owners who spoke to VOA hope to continue working. Makar Lieberman is buying camouflage and plans to start making military uniforms. Alina Kocharovska says there is a way to make shoes for the Ukrainian military on a commercial basis. And Ashot Galstyan says he's almost gotten used to hearing the sound of sirens when delivering food to areas of the country hardest hit. Олеся Бакалець in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You can read and see much more on this story and many others at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
Happening now in Asia. Around 400 military reservists in Taiwan executed training exercises to boost combat readiness on Monday, following the president's call for unity as the war in Ukraine stirs fears of an attack by China on Taiwan. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Every Sunday, dozens of Ukrainian and Russian Christian believers congregate at First Russian Baptist Church in Mount Crawford, Virginia. As Russia's invasion of Ukraine continues, these worshipers say they condemn violence and are focusing on what unites them. VOA's Yaya Bajinji visited the church, spoke to congregants, and filed this report narrated by Namo Abdullah.
Thousands of kilometers away from the Russian invasion of Ukraine stands a church, built 25 years ago in rural Virginia, where Ukrainian and Russian worshippers gather every Sunday for prayers.
We have come to worship God, and the conflict in Ukraine, it grieves us a lot because we always considered ourselves as brothers and sisters, and what is currently happening in Ukraine and between Russia and Ukraine, it really grieves us a lot.
Worshippers here at the First Baptist Church in Mount Crawford, Virginia, pray for a peaceful conclusion to the war, but say most people are against the conflict.
There are people that really want this war, and if I say majority of the people don't. So I don't think this war is needed. I think there are many different ways that we can overcome these differences, but because there are people that want it and those people are in power, it was unavoidable.
Churchgoers here emphasize the need to focus on shared values and heritage. The war is even more devastating for people with a mixed family background.
My mom is Russian. I was born in Ukraine. And I'm married on Belarusian girl. My wife is Belarusian. So me personally, I'm a combination of all these three nations. So I can't see like me fighting with Russians and Russians fighting with Ukrainians, which actually Putin have created. So the thing is, for me as a believer, that we have to stand firm on the position, help those who are in need, and create a peace environment.
I think there is the opportunity for separation, but I think that we should focus on supporting each other. Even if we do come from different backgrounds, I believe none of us want this war, and that we should uphold each other and we should support each other throughout, no matter where we come from.
On February 24, Russia invaded Ukraine. Thousands of people are reported to have been killed in Ukraine since, while more than 2.5 million have fled to neighboring European nations. For Yahya Berzinji in Mount Crawford, Virginia, Namo Abdullah, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia. Reports say living costs in Yangon, Myanmar continue to rise from inflation due to the lasting effects from the COVID-19 pandemic and political turmoil stemming from a February 2021 coup. The World Bank's Myanmar Economic Monitor projects economic activities will remain low. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. In an effort to alleviate the environmental degradation in Mumbai caused by urbanization, a nonprofit group is spearheading a project to grow food forests in the city. These forests consist of hundreds of trees and edible plants grown on small strips of land. From Mumbai, Anjana Pasrika has a report.
In a patch of land on the grounds of a school in Mumbai, this environmental activist plants a sapling in a food forest that stands amid tall concrete buildings.
This time I've got a few fruit tree saplings, a few flowering tree saplings to bring in pollinators, as well as some pepper saplings, chili pepper saplings, which will add to the food that's grown over here.
In this miniature replication of a forest, shorter fruiting trees and other edible plants are being grown in different layers under tall trees. It is one of 12 such spaces grown in and around the city by volunteer group The Turning Tide. After spending years planting trees along roadsides to compensate for Mumbai's disappearing green spaces, George Remedios hit upon the idea of using unused land in places like schools and orphanages to grow food forests.
We're fed up with the environmental condition and the rampant construction that you see around with all the cement. And I've had friends of mine who have lost parents to lung cancer. My own mom's had asthma, and she struggled with it with bad air quality. I knew that trees are something that not only give us oxygen, but they do a lot more than that. They shade, which protects us from the heat, as well as it pulls in all the particulate matter that's around us. They act like, you know, buffers.
It was not easy. The first step was to regenerate the degraded soil to create a forest bed. Dry leaves and twigs that usually end up in landfills came in handy. In the last 3 years, trees like papaya have flourished. The food forest also saves costs in carting away garden waste. Volunteers and residents pitch in to nurture the forest in different ways. Jasmine Bagri brings a lemongrass seedling to plant. The food forest inspires her.
I want to stay here. I feel like working. I actually want to dig in. I can see so many small plants. I'm thinking if I can just pick them up and I can plant them somewhere.
As he gets his hands dirty on a weekend, Floyd Almeida re-establishes the connection with nature that he lost when a building replaced his low-lying childhood home.
It's so beautiful because you have birds, you have bees. You know, you come in the morning to work here. And it's like music, you know, when the birds whistle and, you know, you can hear the sounds of the birds. So, I mean, there's music while you work.
These are heaven. I think these are something which we should cherish. These are places which we should grow and have more.
More such food forests are planned. But for the time being, it is time for Remedios, who became an environmental crusader after quitting his job, to unwind after a morning's labor. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
High in the U.S. Rocky Mountains, skiers race through an obstacle course pulled by riders on horseback. It's a decades-long tradition that is part skiing and part rodeo. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Montana horse wrangler Taylor Stoboff says galloping down a snow-covered city street, pulling a skier on 10 meters of rope, takes a lot of confidence.
You have to believe in your horse, and you also have to believe in yourself. You have to know your horse's limits, so when you're going down the track, if it's a little bit of bad terrain or if it's too deep of the snow, you have to know if your horse is going to be able to make it through it.
Stobaugh is part of a sport called skijoring, where horses and riders pull skiers through a timed course with jumps and sets of rings to catch with your arm. As the rider, she's coordinating her horse and her skier.
So you have a little pep talk before every race to ask them how you want your horse to run, where you need to be so they can hit the jumps and so they can make the gates easily.
Rider Josh Abbott says that communication is key.
The skier reads the track and can kind of tell you, this is what I, you know, move over here, slow down here. And the skier gets to know the gears of the horse and the tendencies of the horse. So it really helps out with the teamwork aspect. And it's really three heartbeats out there.
Two-time national skijoring champion Colin Cook grew up in Montana ski racing.
You can't just grab somebody that ski race, throw them on the end of a rope and expect them to do good. It definitely takes training.
Because you can't always see where you're landing, Cook says you have to scout the course ahead of time.
You're sitting on top of the ramp, looking at where your gate is, and then find a point where you know you need to be going off that gate with that direction. Because you can't see that gate, it's hidden behind the jump. So you're going off to make sure that when you go off of it, you're pointing at that spot that you saw during inspection. So when you come off and land, you're ready to get that turn.
On a circuit that includes events in Alberta, Canada, and the U.S. states of Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, and Utah, for this type of skijoring, Leadville is where it all began. Skijoring historian Lauren G. Monskova.
Leadville skijoring is the oldest skijoring race that has an obstacle course. It started in 1949. You see the Goldenboro Cafe behind us. That is where some cowboys and skiers got together and challenged each other, said, I have the fastest horse. I have the best skier that can hold on to that horse. And let's race.
More than 3 kilometers above sea level, Leadville is North America's highest incorporated city, built on silver mining in the 1870s and now dependent largely on tourism. So this was a welcome return of crowds kept away from last year's race by coronavirus.
After taking a bit of a reprieve last year, the crowds this year have been larger than I've ever seen. The enthusiasm, the ability to cheer, to be all together, to gather at restaurants. We had a live band last night. It really is a great release.
Aspen Traders co-owner James Smits.
It seems to have brought more people to Leadville because so many people want activities that are outdoor and something that's real. And Leadville is an authentic Old West town. Skijoring is just a really important part of that.
Stobaugh says this year's crowds boosted all the competitors.
So I love it. I think it's great. But I think my horse personally runs faster when she has people cheering her on. She loves the attention, and she'll give it her all. So it's awesome to see all these people come out and watch us ride and watch us ski.
Skijoring was part of the Winter Olympics in St. Moritz nearly 100 years ago. Supporters are hoping to see it return as a demonstration sport or as part of the torch relay should the Winter Games come to Salt Lake City, Utah in 2030 or 2034. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Leadville, Colorado.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.